If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion. It's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
You'd think that when your kids take the witness stand during your murder trial, the goal would be to help you out a little, right? You know, maybe throw a warm antidote in, a tear. My mom would never. What we saw this past week at Donna Adelson's courtroom was not exactly a hallmark moment. Instead of a unified front, jurors got a front row seat to a fractured, uncomfortable family dynamic that felt less like a defense strategy and more like a group therapy session gone sideways. Robert Adelson, Donna's son, showed up like he was giving a deposition about a disgraced CEO he once worked for, detached, clinical, but was unflinchingly honest. He didn't seem interested in painting his mother as warm or nurturing. If anything, he testified, and his testimony drew a line around Donna's controlling nature with thick Sharpie, like those big ones, those ginormous ones. You're like, I didn't really make Sharpies this big. And then when Wendy Adelson, the daughter who answered nearly every question with some version of, I don't remember, her eyebrows permanently affixed high in the sky. And look, I'm not knocking Botox. I'm pro Botox, anybody who wants it. But I'm just going to say, Wendy, I don't know if it worked for you. On the stand. I'm saying it doesn't look good. I'm saying that works on the stand in terms of emoting properly. You pair that with the kind of body language that made everyone in the courtroom sit forward just a little bit. Detached doesn't even begin to describe it. This isn't just awkward, it's damning, at least in terms of optics, because when you're on trial for orchestrating the murder for hire, and your kids either won't defend you or can't remember enough to try, that warm grandmother image with the cardigan and that defense, well, yeah, it just kind of crumbles fast. And it's not just what they said, it's what they didn't. No denial, no outrage, no familial loyalty, just distance, discomfort, and maybe a little fear of Donna. Joining me to discuss, Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. From your perspective as both a defense attorney and former prosecutor, how do jurors typically interpret this kind of testimony from immediate family? Is it protective? Is it calculated? Is it just the truth finally spilling out into a room where everyone has to stop pretending? Let's get into it.
Yeah, I mean, who knows an individual better in the vast majority of circumstances, but the children? You know, they grew up with this person. They've seen them over the course of years and years, watched their conduct. They know the family dynamic. They know what their mom's like. you know? And so in this case, the prosecution's theme is essentially that Donna had her hands in all of this, that she was intimately involved in the child custody issue. And those themes were kind of corroborated by what the children had said.
Very, very much so. And very, very clearly, I would say, as well. How do you think jurors are weighing, in contrast, Robert's kind of, you know, matter-of-fact answers against Wendy's kind of foggy, more, I don't remember, hesitancy with her Botoxed eyebrows?
Yeah, you know, certainly the jury is taking it all in, and you have kind of contrasting presentations on the stand between Robert and Wendy here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're going to look at, hey, are one of these kids trying to protect their mom? Do one of these kids kind of not care and are just kind of giving it to the jury straight? You know, and looking at it through that paradigm, the jury might conclude that, hey, Robert, who's been estranged from Donna for some time, he has less of an interest to protect his mom. He's more likely to just kind of come with it and give the straight facts to this jury. So I wonder if they're giving more credibility to sort of how he described things.
And I'm wondering how they read to the jury, and I'm curious to get your perspective, you know, as a former prosecutor, as a defense attorney, where you have, you know, the combination of the two. You got the one being more evasive, you got the one being more direct. Is Wendy's evasiveness, I mean, does that help Mom? Does it hurt Donna by making the whole thing look even shadier? Because they're both coming across, at least with a level of shadiness about Mom, one a little more direct and extreme, the other one like, well, I don't want to say anything too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly projects not the greatest look for Donna there. It looks suspicious. It looks shady, like you said. The other hand, you know, this case it relies on a lot of circumstantial evidence. And Wendy did not provide anything overly direct or substantive mm-hmm. that incriminates Donna, in my opinion. And so while it might not be the best look, it also doesn't add to the prosecution and what they need to meet their burden.
But it also went to the character of Donna Adelson. And I think that's a big part of all it. Understanding Donna Adelson, not just circumstantial evidence, but understanding the character. And if the jury understands people at all, they'll know if something is a big divergent from their normal line of actions. And it seems Donna consistently was out there all the time talking about the problem, the big problem being Dan Markell. No matter what it was, it seemed like there was no filter on Donna most of the time. So could we do this? Could we do that? Could we get the money? Could we hire a hitman? I mean, it sounds like it was just this just throw up of all of these ideas. And then if you're reading it together, you hear Wendy later talking to, you know, an ex-boyfriend that my brother looked into all options. Sounds like Charlie took the hint that, you know, Donna was suffering and we had to help Donna. We had to fix this for Donna more than anyone else because she couldn't sleep at night, this and that. And that he literally took that, you know, just bleh of everything and seeked everything out. That's some disturbing stuff there that anyone went that far.
Oh, sure. I mean, the picture painted of Donna Adelson so far is not only someone who is hyper invested in this child custody dispute, but someone who's willing to go to great lengths to get the outcome that she wanted with respect to this child custody dispute. We talk about offers of like $1 million. Like, mm-hmm. who has that? And who is willing to put that up just to get sort of a child custody arrangement that they want? Donna Adelson is the answer. Then on top of that, you know, the communications with Charlie Adelson, those are beginning to come out as well. And not a good look, certainly something that goes to motive for Donna Adelson.
Yeah, we'll start talking more about Charlie and what we're learning from some of the exes in just a little bit. The defense even tried to subpoena Wendy to testify for them, and then that kind of didn't happen. We've also learned that Wendy hasn't talked to Mom since 2023, since the verdict came down for Charlie. The fact that they tried to get Wendy to testify via subpoena, is that desperation? I mean, how does that play in a jury's mind?
You know, if the jury hears about that, what it shows is that Wendy was not cooperative with the defense. Because if on the defense side, if you have a witness you want to call and they're cooperative, you don't have to subpoena them. You just say, hey, can you please show up at court at this time and come help us out? It sounds like more was required to get Wendy to get there. And in fact, now she's been called as a witness for the prosecution. So obviously some dissension within this family that has clearly fallen apart after this murder for hire plot and Dan Markell's untimely death.
What was your reaction when you heard that they hadn't spoken since 2023?
Look at the timing on that. I mean, that is curious, isn't it? Like, you know, if they had a decent relationship up until then, why 2023? Oh, that's the time where the brother Charlie was convicted of murder. And so what it suggests perhaps is that Wendy sort of saw the writing on the wall, saw that Donna might be next, did not want to get herself, Wendy, involved in some kind of criminal liability, and decided to distance herself from any potential criminal actors in this sort of incestuous murder for hire plot.
And that's probably at an attorney's advisement, I would think. I mean, her attorney's obviously the one that struck back and said, yeah, you're not going to go and testify. Let's talk about the immunity that she has here in this, because, you know, she did go up and testify. I don't think she necessarily revealed a whole lot that would go against her. I would say some of the testimony from other people doesn't look all that good about Wendy. But what does it mean where she has that impartial immunity from what she said on the stand?
So what that means, Tony, is that the prosecution thinks her testimony was valuable enough that they're saying, hey, you get up there and tell the truth, and whatever comes out, we're not going to prosecute you for it. And so oftentimes what that results in is really incriminating testimony from the witness, because they know they're not going to get in trouble for saying it. Here, that wasn't really how Wendy played it. And there's at least a chance that if Wendy held back or was not truthful on the stand, that immunity could be pulled and Wendy could be in the crosshairs at some point down the road.
Her main theme seemed to be, I don't remember. Is that lying by omission? Is that by omission? I mean, is there anything that she did up there by not being truthful? I mean, I don't remember was the big thing. I find that hard to believe. These are the biggest moments in your life and you seem to be clueless on them. But again, you know, she doesn't want to incriminate herself. She doesn't have to incriminate herself. But the I don't remember remarks, was there too much of that? Or was that, did she play that card right?
Well, I think if you're the defense, you think she played that card right. In terms of saying, I don't remember, it's hard to show that that's a lie, because you got to get inside somebody's head. And, you know, perhaps they would say, oh, yeah, I recalled this fact 2 weeks ago, but I was on the stand, I was nervous and whatever, and I didn't remember. That being said, the prosecution can look into digital forensics. They can look into evidence that they have from witnesses. You know, for example, if Wendy relayed facts about the case, you know, recent in time to her testimony, then got on the stand and said, I didn't remember. That gives rise to the specter that, hey, you're just kind of fibbing up there trying to protect somebody and you're not being completely forthcoming here.
How do you think it read to the jury, the I don't remembers? Because that, I'm going to go with not forthcoming. Again, if you just look at the situation, this is where the father of her children died. These are key moments in your life. This is stuff that's going to be ingrained forever. And you're like, I don't remember if they have the McRib back at McDonald's this month or not, as if it's something that lighthearted. We're talking about murder, your children's father being gone away, your brother conspiring. You don't remember any of this? I mean, one could say it's trauma and it's blocked out, but I don't think I buy it. I don't think a jury's going to buy it either.
You know, common sense would tell us in many circumstances that these are the very types of facts one would remember. They are overly traumatic. They could be misremembered. There could be perception issues, but you're going to have that in your head. I think when she got up there, it definitely looked like she was protecting her mom. And the jury is going to say, hey, why would she need to do that if the mom did nothing wrong?
From the prosecution side, I mean, how do you use the cracks in this case to argue of Donna's control? And if you're the defense, is there any way to make those fractures look irrelevant or harmless?
You know, I think from the prosecution's perspective, one thing that they could do is you got Whitney's testimony saying, or Wendy's testimony saying, I don't remember. And then you have Robert's testimony saying how controlling Donna was. Even though there had been an alleged lapse in communication between Wendy and Donna, the prosecution can argue in closing that, hey, this was textbook of how this family dynamic works. And Donna is sort of at the helm, and you're not going to cross her, and you're not going to say anything that's going to be problematic for her. And that's exactly what Wendy did, because she's trying to protect her mother and hiding information that could be incriminating. That's how the prosecution's going to play it. Defense is going to play it like, hey, I don't remember is an absence of evidence. Got an absence of evidence. You have reasonable doubt.
There's no cardigan warm enough to fix what happened on that witness stand. Because once the prosecution gets the jury to see through the sweet grandma narrative, not that there really has been one yet, what's left is a matriarch who appears cold, calculated, and deeply resented by her own children. It's a tough look for any defendant, but it's particularly devastating when the entire defense strategy hinges on Donna being a loving glue of the family, not a puppeteer behind the curtain. What we've heard isn't just testimony, it's character evidence. Jurors weren't listening to strangers on the stand. They were listening to the people who knew Donna Adelson best. And those people, her own kids, seemed either incapable or unwilling to paint her as anything but dominant and obsessive. And in Wendy's case, someone worth distancing from entirely. That silence between mother and daughter since Charlie's conviction, it says more than any cross-examination ever could. Here's the twist, though. While it's easy to get caught up in the emotion of it all, the betrayal, the tension, the courtroom drama, this is still a case that must be decided on evidence. As Eric pointed out, despite the awkward family dynamic, neither Robert nor Wendy gave testimony that definitively proves Donna orchestrated Dan Markell's murder. That's the line the defense is clinging to, even as the image of Donna as a grieving, loving parent starts to fall apart in real time. We're just getting started in our conversation with Eric. Next up, the money trail. 44 checks, all personally signed by Donna, all sent to the woman prosecutors say helped carry out the hit. You know how they say, follow the money? Well, we did, and it leads somewhere very dark. That's coming up. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that piece in our conversation. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to us or watching us. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi is what to search on YouTube or wherever you get podcasts to find us on either platform. Let me know your thoughts in the comments on YouTube. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.